Thanks for being here. I so appreciate your participating in these videos and podcasts. We are reviewing the letter to the husband and wife of Ichi Nasawa from the stay, the extended stay at their home. That Nichiren deeply appreciates while he was in exile on Sado Island. Now, just as a reminder, Japan is going through some extreme times. A lot of violence, a lot of attacks from the Mongols. They're losing their grip. And Nichiren has every reason to believe that because he's made such a stink, I mean, he's made such a tremendous amount of advice to the rulers of the country, the high-ranking families, and high-ranking monks as well from other schools, that over the past hundreds of years, Japan has been following an incorrect or an erroneous path. Their traditions have led them away from certainly the core teachings of Buddhism, but because the teachings of Buddhism and philosophy are so inextricable from their ruling of the dominion, the ruling class, the lords, the land lords, and in turn their armies of samurai have all been trying to rule the country through deeply authoritarian rule, which Nichiren isn't actually taking direct issue with, although if the rulers were following the teachings of Buddhism correctly, they would see the error in their own ways. And so that would be an intimate question of ruling their own clan, their own country. But Nichiren, you know, I think you can see through these letters, his worldview is huge compared to the average person, certainly in Japan, or anywhere else for that matter. People tend to think their world in terms of their own town or their own region, right? They scarcely ever conceive of a world outside of what they see with their own eyes. That which we take for granted, you know, with the communications that we have, television, radio, internet, so on and so forth. You've heard it said many times, maybe I don't hear it so much anymore, but we've taken for granted how small the world has become. The world, in fact, hasn't become smaller, but it seems so because we seem to be able to reach with our minds and our communications and so forth so much further beyond what we experience in our immediate surroundings, right? And then you take into that, you know, flight and trains and so on and so forth. So you might want to think back in those terms to the experience of the average individual in the 13th century was very, very limited. And in place of that larger worldview, what if you allowed yourself to think beyond your immediate surroundings, what took the place of that, I guess you could say, is tradition. Tradition itself became your extended worldview. So I say that because I want you to understand how deeply attached, ingrained, these ideas of tradition were To us today, tradition is kind of, you know, observing holidays, and we're almost flippant about tradition, because everything to us today, it's much easier to understand how everything is in a state of flux all the time, which is another reason why Buddhism is easier for us to understand, because the teachings of Buddhism center around this idea of constantly changing things. This was very revolutionary thinking, especially when it was first introduced by Shakyamuni, right? So still kind of revolutionary idea in 13th century Japan. But certainly, the people of Japan who were practicing Buddhism in their homes, and certainly the recipients of this letter from Nichiren, both have, Nichiren is in a unique or an uncomfortable position of sorts here, because he's extremely grateful for their life-giving support while he was exiled on Sado Island. But at the same time, he sees the world in a very different way than those locals do, and he understands that the traditions they're adhering to, the Nembutsu, it's prohibiting them from seeing the bigger picture. And being as he's been intimate with these people, he's lived with them in their house, been fed and fed them, shared his messengers, you know, his occasional gifts of support and donations, whatever you want to call them. So he has a very close relationship with these people, the husband and wife. And the husband is actually a lay monk, so he's teaching others in this tradition of Nembutsu. So this is somebody he deeply wants to reach and help him. You know, in Nichiren's eyes, he's actually saving their lives, right? Because they're in the midst, not only because of the teachings of Buddhism, but because they're in the midst of a future onslaught from the Mongols. The Mongols are slowly marching down from the north and sacking areas of Japan. And it's only a matter of time before they get to Sado. And if your mind isn't right when that happens, you're going to suffer greatly. So Nichiren feels very motivated to get him unstuck from his traditions. And his wife, of course, I think the recipient of this letter, marked as his wife, indicates that he's a little more secure in her really reading through the letter and getting it and encouraging her husband. Her husband is more concerned with the way he appears in his community than he is with, although he's very sympathetic to Nichiren, he's very timid about taking that committed step toward declaring his allegiance to the Lotus Sutra. The Nembutsu rails against the Lotus Sutra, so it's quite a flip for him to make. And he's less worried, I think, from all indications, about making the flip for himself than he is about owning that Lotus Sutra in his heart and that being seen or somehow observed, even if he doesn't declare it outright. If his followers and his teachers and students see him as someone who's now swaying, regional opinions being what they are, he could subject himself to reprisals. So he's not only concerned, he's afraid. So in a way, Nichiren has to wake him up and go, look, there's a bigger issue at hand here that you're not thinking about. So I say all of that to prepare you for this next, as we close out this letter, this Gosho, you're going to see Nichiren move from, as we have throughout the letter, move from a gentle kind of acknowledgement and suggestion, more of a shoju kind of way. And transition, as he has been, to a more adamant kind of position. And now we've been listening to him kind of recount his life experience up to the moment of his joining them on Sado Island, right, from his exile. So now we're going to take a final shift where Nichiren is going to be telling them in no uncertain terms, okay, here's the worldview you need to adopt. Here's what you need to understand. And he's going to make a rather profound gift to both the husband and wife as his ultimate offering to sway them away from tradition and on the correct, the teachings, or put them on the correct path in their attainment of Buddhahood practice, right? So, we closed last time with Nichiren's struggle with sending him or them a copy of the Lotus Sutra. And he wasn't sure that the husband, the lay monk, was reachable or confident enough that he could bequeath this gift of a translation of the Lotus Sutra. Mind you, it's written by hand in Nichiren's hand. He doesn't want to just give it to him, like, if you can read this in your spare time, right? He wants to bequeath this to them as a very respectful offering that they will take seriously and actually read. And he's been torn about that because he doesn't really get the sense that even though they support him in person and they treat him well, that they've severed their ties in any way with Nembutsu. He doesn't get this commitment to grow out of that tradition. So he didn't send the Lotus, the translation of the Lotus Sutra to them, and he's torn by it. And so this is where we rejoin his dialogue. In the midst of all this, he says, I received word that the copy of the Lotus Sutra that I had earlier intended to send had been destroyed in a fire in Kamakura. Man, what is going on? What kind of karmic act is going, you know, effect is going on here? What obstacles, you know? So he continues, more than ever, it seemed as though the lay monk had no connection with the Lotus Sutra. And I wondered at myself for ever having promised to send him a copy. Like, if it was burned in a fire, it's almost as though karmically, this lay monk Ichinosawa has a tremendous aversion to getting this sutra. He doesn't even want to see it presented to him, karmically. Moreover, when the nun of Kamakura was leaving Sado to return home, she found herself in difficulty for money to cover her journey. I reluctantly asked the lay monk to provide for her expenses, though I regret having made such a request. I could, of course, simply return the sum of money to him along with the interest, but my disciples point out that I would still be failing to keep my original promise. I am faced with difficulties any way I turn, and yet I am afraid that people may think I am given to irresponsible and deceitful behavior. This is an interesting lesson for us, right? We want to help people, and in our dedication to helping others, sometimes we can overreach, and that can be as dangerous as not doing enough. So we have to be really vigilant, use our Buddha nature, chant, and awaken our Buddha-ness, our Buddha mind, and awaken to our Buddha wisdom to guide us in these things, right? Don't be too quick. Therefore, I feel I have no choice but to send a copy of the Lotus Sutra, of the entire Lotus Sutra, in 10 volumes, since the lay priest's or lay monk's grandmother seems at heart to be more deeply drawn to the sutra than does the lay monk himself. I entrust it to you for her sake. So he's going to carry through with this promise, with the proviso that the grandmother seems to, at very least, be interested in reading the Lotus Sutra and learning more about this practice. And he's handing it over to the wife of the lay monk, thinking that she has a softer approach, a more open approach to the sutra herself. So giving her the sutra for her mother, grandmother, to read is sort of a sideways offering to her as well, hoping that the husband, seeing that the Lotus Sutra is there and her wife and his maybe his mother or what, the grandmother, the priest, okay, the lay priest's grandmother, so it would be his mother's mother, so that she's probably staying with them, right? So the Lotus Sutra is going to be in the house and it's going to be read, and if it is there, it should influence this lay monk, Ichino Sawa, to have a gander, right? Because he was sympathetic after all. So the Lotus Sutra, this translation, won't be in danger, but it's a very kind of soft way of introducing it to him, right? While at the same time enlisting the protection of the grandmother, who's very interested, and the wife, therefore, more likely to follow and learn for herself. So he goes on. The things I say sound like the words of a fool, and so no one heeds them. Nevertheless, I must note that in the 10th month of the 11th year of the Bunei era, 1274, cyclical sign Kinoe-inu, when the kingdom of the Mongols launched an attack on Tsukushi, the defenders of the island of Tsushima held fast, but Sosoma no Jo, the deputy constable of Tsushima, fled. As a result, the Mongols were able to attack the commoners, killing or taking prisoners among them, the men, and herding the women together and passing ropes through holes in their hands to tie them to their ships or taking them prisoner. Whew, that's a horrible visual. Not a single person escaped. So this is the nature of what's going on around them in Japan. Japan is in disarray. And leadership, which includes tradition and authoritarian rule, seems to be losing its power, losing its confidence, losing its power certainly to protect its lands, its people. And it's Nichiren's assertion that this is because they're not functioning correctly. They're not working correctly in the world. They're not following the nature of life and the rules of how life exists, of how life should be managed. About, I mean, this is the greater teaching of Buddhism, right? Because through each individual, so changes a family, a community, and a government. They're all tied together, you see. So, he goes on. In the attack of the island of Iki, the same thing happened. When the Mongol ships pressed on to Tsukushi, the lay monk magistrate, who was in charge of the area, the former governor of Buzen, fled in defeat. Now, this is the lay monk magistrate. Do you see how religion and government are intertwined? We have this situation in the United States. If you look at Louisiana, it's not divided into, what do we call them in most states? Counties. The counties are parishes in Louisiana. It's still adhering to these old traditions of Southern religion. Imagine the entire country of Japan being much more staunchly that way. The aldermen, the positions in the church are the government officials. It's a very strange thing, especially that it still exists in any form today. But all you have to do is travel the world a little bit and you'll see, you know, entire countries like Iran and many others led in this way, right? Or in Arab countries led by holy kingdoms somehow imbued with power through their religious thinkings. Anyway, several hundred of the Matsuratu men were struck down or taken prisoner, and the population of one coastal village after another suffered the same fate as the people of Iki in Tsushima. When the Mongols attack the next time, what will it be like? When thousands and millions of fighting men from their country come swarming and pressing upon Japan, what will happen? Their forces in the north will first of all attack the island of Sado, where you are, right? In no time at all, they will kill the stewards and constables of the area. When the common people attempt to flee to the northern mountains, they will be killed or taken prisoner, or they'll perish in the mountains. We must stop to consider why such terrible things should occur. The reason, as I stated earlier, is that every single person in this country has committed the three cardinal sins. Therefore, Brahma, Chakra, the gods of the sun and moon, and the four heavenly kings have taken possession of the body of the Mongol ruler and are causing him to chastise our nation. So this is the equation for people that people understand, is that their lives are ruled by the constraints and the teachings of tradition. And therefore, there's a direct consequence between their belief systems and how their lives unfold. So this is why Nietzsche is teaching in this way, because he's just trying to reach the common people, right? And the common people include this lay monk. I may be a fool, Nietzsche says, but having declared myself to be the envoy of Shakyamuni Buddha and the votary of the Lotus Sutra, it is nothing short of amazing that my words go unheeded. He's proven himself, right? Because of this failure, the nation now faces ruin. Not only are my words not heeded, but I have been driven out of province after province, been dragged about, attacked and beaten, and sent into exiles, and my disciples have been killed or had their fiefs taken away from them. If someone were to mete out such treatment to an actual messenger of his parents, could that person's actions possibly be condoned? Yet I, Nichiren, am father and mother to all the people of Japan. I am their sovereign. I am their enlightened teacher. Should they turn against one like me? It is absolutely certain that those who chant the Nembutsu are destined to fall into the hell of incessant suffering. You may depend on my words. Now this is Shakyabuku. He's attacking directly the traditions that they are hanging on to. Tenuous or not, they need to stop fooling themselves and change their attitude, change their understanding of what's happening in their lives. Seek their Buddha wisdom now. Not in some future existence, not through some mythical land. Awaken to this moment. See what's happening in your life, right? This is what Nichiren is trying to close this letter out with. It's his last ditch effort, accompanied by a copy of the 10 volumes of Lotus Sutra. So he has to make sure that it's received in its proper intent. He goes on, "When the Mongols come to make their assault, what will you do? Even if you should put this copy of the Lotus Sutra on your head or hang it around your neck and flee to the northern mountains, the fact remains that over a period of many years you have given support to the Nembutsu priests and have recited the Nembutsu yourself, and in doing so have made yourself an enemy of Shakyamuni Buddha and the Lotus Sutra. Understand the cause that you've been making. If at that time you should lose your life, you must bear no resentment toward the Lotus Sutra. When you are brought before King Yama in his palace, what will you say? At that time, though you may feel foolish in doing so, you will probably declare that you are a lay supporter of Nichiren. But enough of that. As for this copy of the Lotus Sutra that I am sending..." Well, that's interesting. Let's talk for a moment about that last paragraph. When you're finally faced with your due, when death is near, you will admit what I know. You will admit to yourself that you have been deeply swayed by Nichiren, by the Lotus Sutra, and that you actually have held much doubt about the traditions you've been following. Because in your heart, you know better. You're just full of fear. So this is why Nichiren is talking to him so directly, using Shakabuku as a method to give one last blow to this fear that he has and encourage him. Look, just go for it. Dedicate yourself to what you know is right. Let go of this, the appearances of things. This Nembutsu, it has not served you or the country well. Take resolve in the Lotus Sutra. Study the Lotus Sutra. You know you want to, right? So this is, in essence, how Nichiren is approaching. But then he, again, because he has a soft spot for them, he says, "Well, enough of that. As for this copy of the Lotus Sutra that I'm sending, you should ask Gakujobo to read it for you regularly. But whatever anyone may say, you must not allow any of the Nembutsu monks, true word teachers, or observers of the precepts to look at it." Right? That would not serve you well. If they see it, they look at it, they're going to manipulate and attack, and it's going to cause you great harm. So keep it secret. Keep it to yourselves. Read it constantly, but just for you. Because he knows their commitment is weak. So until they start studying, they won't gain the confidence to be able to protect that teaching, to be able to repel onslaughts from outside, from people who don't want them to know this, especially the Nembutsu teachers, right? "Though people may claim to be disciples of Nichiren, if they do not possess some proof of that fact from my hand, you must not trust them." In other words, people may say, "Oh, I know Nichiren. We're buddies from way back." Well, let me tell you a little bit about Nichiren, right? This is people's nature. So Nichiren is saying, look, if they don't show you, a letter, a document, a mandala, a copy of some teaching that's in my handwriting, my characters, my script, and signed by me, then they have no claim to be my disciples or my friends or my, right? Because there's no way I have a follower, a student of mine, who's dedicated at whatever level, that hasn't received something in my hand. If they can't show that to you, then they're just talking through their butts. They're just trying to manipulate you. So be careful. And this is the state of Japan at the time, right? People are it's an authoritarian government. So people behave in that way. They say, "Believe me, I'm telling you." And they have no proof of whatever they're saying. They're just establishing authority out of midair, right? And with that, Nichiren closes with "my deep respect, Nichiren." It's an interesting go show, an interesting letter from the standpoint of being a compassionate teacher with living at a time of such controversy and violence and you know, things that shake you to your core. Being a dedicated teacher of the way, of the Lotus Sutra, of enlightenment, you really want to see the amelioration of the people, not only that you know, but more broadly, the country that you live in and the world at large. And Nichiren's worldview is massive compared to the worldview of the people that he's generally surrounded by. Even the rulers and the ruling class have a very narrow, narrow understanding of the world and how it works. And that's part, also part and parcel of authoritarianism, right? It's very, it's secular, it's very power oriented, and it's very regional, right? Authoritarianism has a very hard time conceiving of the entirety of humanity and the world. It just reduces everything to my stomping ground, right? And this trickles down into the people, of course. And so Nichiren is trying to expand the minds and the world view of the people around him. But conversely, Nichiren is part of that world and he's in it. And those who help him intimately, he has a deep concern for, a deep compassion for. And this is what he means by father and mother to those people, because he has that sense of filial attachment to his students or would-be students. Maybe, you know, and we have stories in the West all the time of the most troubled child gets the most attention and all the weird dynamics that causes in a family with multiple children, right? But it's not that the parents have any less love or admiration for their children that are doing well. It's that they recognize that this child, with his obstacles or her obstacles, is in much more need of guidance. So in this same way, this is how Nichiren feels about this couple. And I mean, there are many lay monks of Nembutsu, even in Ansado, right? But these were the ones that took him in and that protected him and gave him shelter. So of course he's going to have a stronger feeling of allegiance to them, if for no other reason that they made a commitment outside of their traditional acceptance. See, they've already taken a step away. So, and that's all the more reason that this monk feels nervous about showing allegiance, because he's already shown a pliability, he's already shown a softness toward Nichiren, where the rest of the people have been told and admonished quite clearly by the Lord, constable of Sado, Nichiren's of this and that, and you don't treat him well. So they're already going counter to the establishment, if you will. So Nichiren sees that there's an opening there, and he can't live with himself not taking advantage of that and helping these people in any way he can, because in Nichiren's eyes, that's the whole purpose of him being there, right? There's a lot of information there that we can absorb into our own lives, our own situation. Why do we know the people that we know? How is it that some people offer us support and help? Out of what? Out of what commitment? What is that energy? What is that magnetism? What is that cause-making compassion that's going on there? See, we can understand our relationships with others in a much more deeply holistic way, in an energetic sort of way. How is the energy moving through all of these people that I live my life around? And how is it that these people, you know, sometimes I've noticed that neighbors will seem closer to me than my own family. That's not an accident. There's a reason for that. We have words like simpatico and so forth, but I don't want to diminish it because it's very important to look at those dynamics, how relationships ebb and flow with everything that we experience. Has everything to do with our mindset and the life condition we're living and what that attracts versus what it repels. So this internal, not argument, but you can read in this letter, Nichiren's own wrestling with this nature of his responsibility of his life condition and what he's doing with his life and his worldview and the people he touches as he navigates his own life and its influence, right? So, with that, I'll let you go until the next one. That closes out the letter to the lay monk Ichinosawa. And I look forward to the next one. Thank you so much again. Obviously, we're together for a reason. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. I believe all of it is about strengthening our practice so that we can awaken our Buddha mind more and more every day and let our Buddha wisdom guide us through this life. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Take care of yourself.